numbers show?
Well, July was another strong month for gaming revenues in Maryland, nearly $76 million, $52 million of which came from slots and the balance from table games. So, you know, we were up year over year by 9.7%. So it is a strong showing. You know, we expect it to get stronger, at least on the total bottom line number with the opening of Horseshoe Baltimore later this month.
Now, with Horseshoe Baltimore opening later this month, and then I guess you'll really see the impact in the September numbers because that'll be the full month that Horseshoe is open. What's the impact of Horseshoe going to be on these numbers?
Well, overall, it's going to grow the market. There's going to be more gaming revenue generated in Maryland because of the opening of the Baltimore City Casino, just a facility of that size and its ability to market. And I think, you know, the fit and finish of the facility itself, it's very nice. I've been in it several times as they're nearing the close of construction. I think it's going to be a nice addition to the entertainment landscape here in Baltimore and in Maryland. It's going to serve as competition for the existing facilities, but its impact is going to be that, you know, we project that it's going to grow the market.
So you expect new money to come in. People who wouldn't have otherwise gone to a casino will go to Horseshoe. Is that?
Yeah, they'll go to Horseshoe. I think Horseshoe will have the opportunity because it's connected to the Caesars Entertainment player database and their ability to aggressively market to that database. And that's really, I think, one of the hallmarks of the Caesars Corporation. They've got more casinos in the United States than any other company. We expect, and when I say we, these numbers were generated by some outside consultants that the agency hired, but we expect that on the slot side that we're going to see, you know, somewhere around about 150 or so million dollar increase, an increase in table games of around $75 to $80 million. So it's going to grow the market. Some of that will be cannibalizing other casinos that exist, in particular Maryland Live. We project that their gaming revenue will likely decrease somewhere around 20% with the opening of the Baltimore City Casino, but it is going to overall grow the market and increase gaming revenue and taxes paid.
Right now, Maryland Live is generates the most money of the four casinos. Do you expect Horseshoe to take the top spot?
That's not what we project now. We think that Maryland Live, because of its size, will continue to be the market leader. But, you know, Horseshoe is going to be competitive. Again, they're going to market competitively. They're going to have the second largest facility in the state. We expect when things settle out that the Maryland Live Casino will have, you know, somewhere between 3,500 and 4,000 slot machines. The Baltimore City Casino is going to start with 2,500. Don't really anticipate that growing. Maryland Live will continue to have more table games than the Baltimore Casino will. But, you know, comparing it to the other three facilities, Rocky Gap, Hollywood Casino, Perryville, and Ocean Downs, clearly what's happening in Baltimore is more on the size and scale of what you see at Maryland Live.
You hear about this with other states. Is Maryland close to the saturation point for gambling, or is it still a growing area, just based on the figures you have and what's projected?
No, clearly I think through the consultants' projections that the market's going to grow, that wouldn't indicate that we're at a saturation point. You know, I think it's clear if you have followed the news of the gaming industry in Delaware that it is beleaguered, and they are, you know, pinning a lot of that frustration on what's happened in Maryland, that, you know, Maryland, with the opening of its casinos, has clawed back substantial revenue that was leaving the state of Maryland to go to the Delaware casinos, and now those casinos are going to the Delaware legislature looking for different forms of relief. And, you know, we expect that when the MGM casino opens in National Harbor in 2 years, that will grow the market again. But I think, you know, that is going to be a function of geography as much as anything, because that casino is going to be located in an area that's really going to maximize the ability to pull gaming revenue in from out-of-state locations, Washington, D.C., and in particular Northern Virginia, the entire state of Virginia, and really if you go south where there isn't any significant casino development, that they'll be able to incentivize people to come up and obviously take advantage of kind of what we call transient tourist activity in the Washington, D.C. area.
Because it's right along the Woodrow Wilson Bridge. Yeah. People can hop in their cars and
hop on a car
and come right out.
You can hop on your in a car. I think they're obviously investigating public transportation, yeah. And there's water taxis across the river.
Let me go back to a couple of years. I know it's been nearly two years since Question 7 passed, and that not only authorized the sixth casino at National Harbor, but it authorized table games. It also authorized casinos operating 24 hours a day, Horseshoes opening as a 24-hour facility. They even called their bar Club 1440 for the number of minutes in a day, their main bar. What impact has that had on Maryland's gambling revenues?
I think it's clearly had a positive impact. I mean, table games is really what I would point to as being the driver for the growth in the revenue. In general, I think the East Coast, it used to be Atlantic City, was seen as being a thriving location for table game play. We have been able, in Maryland, I think, to capture that. I think a lot of the credit goes to the operators who have done a nice job of incorporating table games into their offerings, in particular Maryland Live, and the way that they did that. If you walk through that facility, you would never know that it started out initially just as slots only, and how they've really seamlessly incorporated the table games and then built out the poker room, which I think is clearly one of the most successful and well-attended and largest poker rooms on the East Coast, and really, I think, seen very vibrantly across the entire country. So I'm not really sure that we've had a good opportunity to measure the impact of 24-hour operation just because it was contemporaneous with so many other changes. You know, was the change because of 24-hour operation, or was it because of the introduction of table games? Clearly, there's been a lot going on. And also, I would just point out that there has been a significant economic development aspect to the growth of just casino gaming in general, and that was, I think, one of the promises or approaches that was tried to be that we tried to develop in during the expansion was the growth of employment opportunities, and there are now more than 4,000 people who work in the gaming industry in Maryland, and that explosion has really, of course, also been time to the introduction of table games, because table games are so labor intensive.
Yeah, I was told in the case of Horseshoe, they actually hired more people. They were initially going to hire like 1,700 to 1,900. They wound up hiring more than 2,000. They have a lot of part-time dealers. And when they had job fairs throughout the city, there was overwhelming demand. There were people who wanted these jobs. I mean, they had more people than they had slots to fill.
I certainly believe that. I didn't attend those job fairs, but I know that people are looking for work, and they're looking for good work, and under the requirements of the Maryland law governing gaming, jobs at the casinos have to offer health insurance. They have to offer retirement benefits. So these are going to be good jobs that pay, a reasonably solid living wage. They're difficult jobs, though. I mean, you think about a card dealer who is on their feet the entire time. I mean, this is hard work. I think, frankly, some of the casinos are also hiring in anticipation of attrition that's going to come. Some people are going to find out that working at a casino is not like visiting and playing at a casino. you have to work in the evenings and at nights and on weekends and when the people who want to come. But I think for people who have, been looking for meaningful work, this has provided a good opportunity for them.
Part of your oversight deals with the Maryland Lottery. What's been the impact on all this on the Maryland Lottery?
Well, we're going to release our revenue numbers next week, but we've been tracking, and again, for the second straight year, we are going to have a modest sales decline. We're seeing some cannibalization of our traditional lottery sales because of the casinos. In particular, I think our Keno product, which is probably the most casino-like game that we offer in our traditional lottery portfolio, has seen significant erosion. We know that the closer the retailer is to the Maryland Live Casino, the greater that erosion.
That'll be the same way with Horseshoe, too.
We're anticipating some further erosion as well, yeah. So, I think all things being equal, it is modest, and what we're going to report next week, I won't give you the precise numbers now, but what we will show is that year over year there was a total increase in gaming revenue that went to the state of Maryland, either the general fund or the education trust fund, from traditional lottery and the proceeds at the casinos.
You also, you go into Horseshoe, you go into any casino, there's the responsible gaming message, and you see it flashed on the screens, even at Horseshoe, where they're also flashing the countdown clock till the casino's opening. And I know you oversee those efforts. What has been the impact on that side? I mean, has there some gambling opponents will say that the more casinos you have, the more problem gamblers you develop.
I think that the science is a little murky on that. I think that there needs to be continued research. The state of Maryland undertook a prevalence study to try to measure problem gambling, and that study was actually concluded about a month after the Hollywood Casino in Perryville opened in October of 2010. So really, it was a very large sample size, over 6,000 people. Most of that data was gathered before there was casino gaming in Maryland. It showed two things. One, that about 90% of people had identified as having gambled at some point in time in their life. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, either casino gaming, pari-mutuel, you know, at a racetrack, playing the lottery, or it could be something as seemingly nebulous or benign as, you know, putting $5 into an NCAA March Madness basketball pool. But it showed that, you know, 90% of people had at some point in time self-reported gambling. It also showed that about 3.4% of the Maryland population identified as being a problem gambler or having tendencies towards a gambling problem, and then 1%, which is a subset of that 3.4, self-reported pathological tendencies towards a gambling problem, so much more deep-seated problems. You know, what we've tried to do through the Maryland Lottery and through an organization that we spearheaded to be created called the Maryland Alliance for Responsible Gambling is create a framework so that there's commonality in the messaging so that everyone who wants to find information to get help for a gambling problem or to raise responsible gambling awareness can do that. So now on the back of all the lottery tickets, we print the state's toll-free problem gambling helpline number, which is 800-522-4700. That's the number that is then on the signage of the casinos. Mm-hmm. The you know, signs that are on the ATMs and available at the casinos that are all, that's also flashed at all of the, you know, nearly 4,500 Maryland Lottery retailers that we have throughout the state. So we're trying to get commonality in that messaging. The one program that we operate here is the self-exclusion list. This is the program where people can voluntarily take themselves out of, you know, the casino playing population. They are removed from all the direct mail and marketing campaigns. Their names and addresses are scrubbed, and they're also agreeing that if they're found on the property that they're going to be subject to a trespass charge, and if they win a jackpot, that money is going to be confiscated and given to the problem gambling fund administered by the Department of Health.
So the casinos have pictures of these people? I mean, if somebody that's on this list pops up on a casino security camera, they can take action?
Yeah, they could. I think that we have found that these pictures are being shared, particularly as table games have increased.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't facial recognition software in the casinos to identify people. So I'm 100% confident that at any given time there's probably someone on the exclusion list who's in a Maryland casino. But this is a tool of personal responsibility that they have adopted. We now have over 550 people who have signed up for that list. And that the numbers on that list have increased significantly since table games started over a year ago. The list has also, from a demographic perspective, become appreciably more male. So we think and younger. So we think that, you know, table games, which tends to market and be more enticing to a younger, more male demographic, we're seeing that reflected in people who sign up for the self-exclusion program.
Let me ask you a broader question. You hear about some of the problems in other states, you know, that are, you mentioned Delaware before. Atlantic City is highly publicized. Do you, and I'm not going to ask you this, you know, in specifics to them, but do you worry that Maryland is going to reach that point at some point? And if not, what is Maryland doing to prevent that from happening?
I think it's clear that we're not at that point now. We're anticipating that the gaming market's going to increase with the opening of the Baltimore casino, and again a couple years later with the MGM casino. I think that the lessons from Delaware and Atlantic City is that you have to, you know, plan for the future. You have to always be vigilant to make sure that. And it really doesn't just apply to the gaming market, because all markets, industries can become stale as. You know, if people for whatever reason, refuse to, aren't incentivized to update them. The problem with Atlantic City and Delaware on a smaller scale, it's just been the explosion of gaming opportunities at their borders. I mean, obviously Atlantic City thrived when it was the only game in the entire East Coast, and now you've got casinos in Pennsylvania and in New York. New York's doing a further expansion. Obviously Maryland, but Maryland is a drop in the bucket of Atlantic City's problems. It's really Pennsylvania, and when gaming came to Pennsylvania, that should have probably been a wake-up call to Atlantic City that they were going to have to revisit things. And in speaking to people up there, I know that there was broad discussion that casino operators just didn't think that gaming in Pennsylvania was going to impact them, or that they were positioned differently in the market. And I think if there's anything to be learned, and that people who are working and helping manage the industry in Maryland need to be mindful of, is that if and when change comes around us, that we need to be on the front end of incorporating that and being innovative instead of just passive and kind of being relegated to the same position that Atlantic City and perhaps Delaware are.